Thank you, Chair Samuelford. And I just want to welcome everyone to this Metro Access Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, December 15th, 2025. This is the last meeting we have for this year. So just continuing with some helpful tips. I just want to remind everyone that we do have two American Sign Language interpreters with us. Therefore, when you're speaking, please state your name because it helps them in doing their job well, and it helps everyone who's on the video audio through phone calls and when people listen to the audio afterwards. It's helpful for them. You just heard that this meeting is recorded, and we do place the audio on our website, which is WMATA.com. We do have people who are joining through phone calls. So I just want to remind that if you'd like to unmute yourself, you can press star six. If you'd like to make comments, you can virtually raise hand by pressing star nine. If anybody's joining on the video conference, a lot of people are, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And if you click on the raise hand icon, that will raise and lower your virtual hands. And if people are able to utilize these tools, it will be helpful because then we know that somebody's trying to make comments and we can have one speaker at a time. We also request speakers to describe themselves briefly when initially speaking. For instance, I'm a female, I'm Asian Indian, I wear reading glasses and I have long dark hair. I've got a sort of a multicolored top with gray sweater on. And Chair Samuelford, with your concurrence, I can go ahead and read the agenda and then I can go to the roll call of the committee members.
Sure, please go right ahead. Okay.
So before I start reading the agenda, I will share my screen to have agenda on my screen. And when that's visible, if somebody can confirm, I will appreciate that. Oops.
Wrong screen.
I realized as soon as it got pulled. Just a moment. Okay, I think we are there now.
Just waiting for it to pop up. Yep, we're okay. At the agenda. Beautiful.
Great. Thank you for the confirmation. So as soon as I have finished reading the agenda for today's meeting, we will go to AAC's roll call. And afterwards, Chair Samuelford and the committee will go through the review and approval of today's meeting agenda and last month's meeting minutes. We will have the commendations report along with customer service and outreach, if any. Sarah Roth is going to discuss the Metro Access Eligibility Recertification Process Advocacy. And Allison Anderson, Operations Manager, will provide information and update for Metro Access Inclement Weather Policy. We will have Kevin Hackshaw to provide an update on Uber. At 5:35, we will begin the public comment section, and the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 6 p.m. At this point, I'm going to stop sharing. Going to the roll call of the committee members, when I call out your name, please confirm your presence. Susan Bowmaster?
Present.
Thank you. Darnese Bush? Tino Calabia? Vanessa Coles? Rico Dancy?
Present.
Thank you.
I'm on my cell phone today.
This is Rico. I'm here.
Thank you. Tawan Farmer. Debbie Fisher.
I'm here.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you. Philippa Mazel. Swathananda Kumar.
I'm here.
Thank you. Sandy Newsell.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner. Sarah Rod. Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Samford.
Present.
Thank you. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
And thank you. And Philip Weintraub. Okay, Chair Samford, with that, we conclude today's roster. And at this point, I would like for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
All right. Good evening, everyone, to this Metro Access Subcommittee meeting. First, we're going to do the approval of the agenda. It is fully packed. Are there any additions, changes, or suggestions for the agenda? Hearing the crickets, can I make a motion to move the agenda as is?
So moved.
Second. All right,
second.
Here, thank you. Here in a second, all those in favor for moving the agenda as is, please do so by saying aye.
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 Nays, abstentions, the motion carries to move the agenda as is. Next is the meeting minutes of November. Are there any suggestions, changes, corrections to the minutes? Hearing the crickets, can I make a motion to move to accept the November minutes for the Metrax subcommittee member subcommittee meeting?
This is Rico Dancy. I move to accept the minutes for the
second.
November
All right.
meeting.
Second.
And I hear, second.
Vanessa, second.
Farmer, second.
All right. All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays, abstentions, the motion carries to move to accept the meeting minutes from November 2025 subcommittee meeting. Next, we are going to go with reports with accommodations, customer service, and outreach. Ms. Anderson and her wonderful team.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Allison Anderson. I'm with the Metro Access team. I am a Black female. With right today, a black turtleneck and a brown sweater, and my hairstyle, two strand twists, swooped up in a bun. So, anyway, it is my pleasure to present Mr. Dolan Chittums with our past team to provide the public comments from our last session. Dolan?
Hello, my name is Dolan Chittum, African American male, long locks, with glasses, and a blue sweatshirt. So good afternoon. There was no outstanding public comments to be addressed from the AAC meeting held on November the 3rd, 2025. During the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting held on November 17, 2025, there were three outstanding public comments. The first comment pertained to an AAC member who inquired about how to enroll in the Abilities Ride program and raised concerns about being logged out of online booking due to inactivity. The Abilities Ride enrollment guidance was provided during the meeting. Additionally, it was confirmed that the online booking system cannot save partially completed bookings and times out after inactivity. To follow up with the customer, multiple contact attempts were made and an email with the findings were sent to the customer. The second comment pertained to a customer reporting a late drop-off despite booking for a scheduled appointment time. An investigation confirmed an on-time pickup, but a late drop-off due to a scheduling error and rush hour traffic. Findings were communicated to the customer. The final comment pertained to an AAC member who reported a late arrival to an event in which she had an appointment time and also referenced a late pickup on a return trip. Investigation showed an on-time pickup with a traffic-related delay on the first trip. The return trip was late due to the trip not being monitored closely to attempt to mitigate a late arrival. The issues were addressed with the OCC contractor management team, and the customer was notified of the findings. Now moving to the accommodations. In November 2025, there were 376 accommodations among the recipients. Central Avenue received 51, Challenger received 64, Transdev OCC received 142, Industrial Road received 19, Hubbard Road received 68, MTM received 5, Eligibility received 2, and abilities drive received a total of 25. This concludes my report.
Thank you, Mr. Chittums. Thank you for that wonderful month-after-month report. Any questions for him as it relates to this topic and his report he's gave? If not, thank you for doing the superb job you've always been doing every month. Miss Anderson, any outreach?
Actually, yes, sir. I know that both Mr. Blake and Miss Williams Hall did attend an outreach event. I think about a week or so ago. Mr. Blake, would you like to comment on that particular event?
Yes, Christian Blake here, African American male, wearing glasses and a Metro jacket. Terry Williams Hall and I attended a meeting of the Conference Commission on Disability Concerns at the Emory Fellowship United Methodist Church on Saturday, December the 6th. We went there, spoke about the Metro Access service and what service can and cannot do as a shared ride public transit service. We also listened to concerns. We shared our contact information and we'll follow up on an individual with a specific trip related matter. So that was our outreach for that event.
All right. Thank you so much for sharing that information. Any questions? If not, thank you so much, Mr. Blake. We'll definitely be hearing from you again during our wonderful presentations this evening. So now we have next, Sarah, you are up about the Metro Access Eligibility Certification Process Advocacy. And by the end of your presentation, we would love to hear if you have already to put forth a in the AAC here in subcommittee, any motions that needs to go forward to the AAC.
Excellent. So, yes, Sarah Rod, middle-aged Caucasian female wearing a blue shirt today. And I believe Anu is going to help me by pulling up some slides. You will notice that these are very low vision friendly slides. Very simple with the white text on a black background, and they're mostly just to keep me on track and then also to make sure I hit a couple of specific highlights for it. So with that, let's move to the first slide. Everybody can see them, right?
Yes. And let me know
Excellent.
if you need me to read. You want me to read it or you got it?
No, it's fine. And those of you that can read it. I'm basically going to give you a gist of what it says. So just a reminder on the background, this all started, gosh, months ago now, last summer, I believe it was, when one of our excellent patrons brought to our attention that things had been changing in the state of Maryland. A new law had been passed dealing with not a paratransit service, but a different related disability service, and wanted to know if the WMATA or Metro could adjust the current paratransit eligibility system to reduce the burden on passengers. In line with those people, particularly who have permanent disabilities that need to keep recertifying the same disability over and over again. After listening to that request, we discussed it somewhat, and the AAC agreed to look into, explore different options for what we could do that might help reduce the burden for recertification for riders with permanent disabilities, realizing that whatever we do would have to be in full compliance with the current ADA laws, FTA regulations, and that sort of thing, because obviously WMATA's got legal requirements that it's got to work within. All right, next. So the key objectives going into this, obviously the first one is to reduce unnecessary burdens on riders. At the same time, it would be nice to also increase the efficiency for the staff itself, having to deal with less paperwork. We certainly need to maintain a rigorous eligibility system. We can't change the standards that have already been set, and we need to keep in alignment with our federal legal requirements. And then I was looking for to see if we could find some best practices with other transit systems that maybe we could model after or take some cues from. Next. So the challenges that were originally brought to our attention for people with permanent disabilities is that every time we have to recertify every 3 years, that basically full medical documentation needs to be resubmitted, even though most of the time people's medical conditions simply haven't changed, that they are permanent disabilities or they're ones that are certainly not going to get better over time. And so this is largely redundant paperwork. It means that passengers have to set up special doctor's appointments in order to get the paperwork filled out. That requires time to go to these appointments. It requires travel fees, sometimes requires doctor's appointment fees and paperwork fees. And this can be a significant challenge for some of our riders. I mean, it's not fun for anybody, but for some of our ridership, that is truly a huge burden and can be a barrier. It's also difficult to set up appointments with certain specialists. They often have long waiting lists. And then we've heard even from doctors that they get annoyed filling out the same paperwork over and over again. It's long paperwork and it takes them away from their actual clinical work with the patient because they're spending time on admin instead of spending time on helping patients with their medical condition. Next. All right, so the legal basis for this, if you guys want to read it in detail, the document was sent around back in October by ANU, but basically, I went back and looked at the ADA to see what it said in terms of what the requirements are, and then also the FTA guidance. And I learned a great deal about both in the process, but I wanted to make sure that whatever we tried to do would fit within the current regulations, so we aren't putting WMATA in a spot where they would have to do something that was certainly not illegal or even questionable, that kind of thing. Having reviewed those, I went on with some help from a lot of other people to go look at different transit systems, what other systems were doing. And it was really interesting to see there are models from all over the country, including New York, Chicago, California, but even Nashville and other places. And I got this all documented in the larger document, exactly what these different systems do. But they had tried to tackle the idea of extraneous paperwork in a number of different ways. Some was eliminating the paperwork altogether and doing renewals via phone. Some were, I shouldn't say eliminate all the paperwork, but basically having a phone call to then review everything, and that was enough. Some were eliminating pieces or parts of it. Some had changed the timelines. There were a number of different sort of options that were out there. But I got very excited when, in this process, I found that the state of California had just passed a new law that basically did exactly what the customer had asked us to do. And that was basically eliminate the need for the medical recertification. And it also moved the timeline back from 3 years to 5 years in that case. So basically, this entire proposal is modeled after a law in California. And the wonderful thing about that, of course, it's already been reviewed thoroughly by an entire legal system and an entire legislature. So it certainly passes muster in terms of the legal framework. And it also shows us what some great best practices are. So, next. So, in terms of the proposal itself, it basically applies to any rider that has a documented permanent disability or one that is going to be non-improving. And the feedback that I got on my original very long presentation, there was a lot of, or several different ideas about exactly how to capture that concept of permanent or non-improving. I went with this, but I think that might be the one thing that there's a number of different options for wording it, but I think everybody has the general idea of what we're talking about. Disabilities that are not going to get better over time. People's fundamental capability is not going to change over time. So there's basically two things that change. The one is changing the recertification process from 5 years to 3 years. I'm sorry, from 3 years to 5 years, so that it happens far less frequently. And then basically getting rid of the medical documentation piece of it. So the idea is the medical part has already been documented. You've already got a doctor's report on exactly what the diagnosis is and the condition is and what the implications of that condition are, and an acknowledgement that this is a permanent disability or something that is not very unlikely to change over time. Otherwise, there's still a recertification process. So this is not, I think it had been raised as a concern at one point. Like, it's not permanent eligibility because things can change. So things that are still required, people still have to verify their personal information. So like their address, so they still live in the correct zone, their phone number, emergency contact information, so people can get a hold of them and to verify that they're still using the service. They also need to verify what kind of aids that they are using, what kind of assistive devices. And this can change even if the condition doesn't change. So somebody decides to use a wheelchair or a cane or a rollator or something else instead of what they had been using previously. That needs to be kept updated so that WMATA has proper records. And then I think the photos issue would be a question of how often that needs to be done, but every 5 years seems fairly reasonable. And then, of course, if there is a change in the person's condition, then that needs to be reported if there had been an improvement or if there has been a decline, because that might require a fuller look at the recertification process. But assuming that nothing has changed, the basic information gets revalidated, and that is the end of that. All right, next. Okay, so I know there was concerns, especially about the idea that, oh, this is taking some of the safeguards, it's taking a safety net away from the system, but it's really not, and here's why. So first of all, it doesn't change the actual eligibility requirements at all. So it's still the same conditions that need to be documented. People's fundamental functional ability still needs to be documented. None of that is changing. It's not making it any easier for somebody to get eligibility for Metro Access. There's still periodic reviews that are going to happen. So it's not permanent eligibility. It's just taking the biggest hurdle and burden away, and one that is sort of unnecessary. So the medical condition's already been documented, it's already on file, it's already been verified, evaluated through the system the first time somebody is declared eligible. And if there's ever any question about it, WMATA has 100% right to go back and reevaluate that. Reevaluation is going to be triggered anytime there's a change in the person's condition or if there are additional conditions that are added. WMATA also has the ability to ask for full recertification anytime they've got a question. So if it appears that there's some sort of fraud or misuse that is suspected, and this is all included in the actual FDA and FTA regulations, they specifically say that there are a number of different circumstances under which recertification can be required, regardless of whatever the timeline is and that sort of thing, that there are certain triggers. Both the rider and WMATA have the authority to go back and or the right to go and ask for a fuller recertification process. And then I know one of Mr. Blake's key issues we talked about, anytime that there's been a change to the system itself, WMATA has the right to go and change whatever the eligibility criteria are on a functional level. So if it suddenly becomes much easier to use the system for somebody who is blind or has a certain kind of mobility disability or a certain kind of issue, it's absolutely okay to go back and review the recertification. Next. Okay, so specifically, I already mentioned this a little bit, but some of the concerns that were raised, particularly by Mr. Blake, but others as well, the potential for fraud being increased. And this really shouldn't have any impact on that. It's not changing the eligibility requirements. WMATA can go back and ask for a full recertification for basically any time it has a question or a concern about something. And as I understand it, the biggest issue we're facing is the misuse of the ID cards by other people, and that really has nothing to do with the medical documentation. So there are ways to deal with that or to try to decrease the potential for fraud, but getting new medical documentation really has nothing to do with whether somebody allows somebody else to use their ID card in a way that's not appropriate. In terms of the fixed route use and improvements, I already discuss this, but basically, if there is a significant improvement or any improvement to the accessibility of the fixed route system, that can trigger a whole review of what the criteria are, or it could target specific individuals if they know that certain people that this was the reason why they had conditional eligibility. That can all be reviewed at any time. So this is not fixing this in place forever and ever. Also, I wanted to point out that, as I've discussed with many of you, there already is an incentive for those of us with conditional eligibility to use the fixed route system. And I think most riders genuinely will ride fixed route if it's safe and it's a reasonable, feasible thing for them to do. Not that we don't love Metro Access, and appreciate that it's there, but most of us are using it because we really have to, not because we want to. If the fixed route were available in a way that was safe and reasonable for us to do so, we would be doing that. And we've already incentivized people using it by offering free rides on the fixed route system. So, while it's a wonderful goal to have 100% accessibility in the fixed route system, it's a long way off. So I don't think that that is really an issue we need to worry about in terms of this kind of an impacting it. And then finally, we had mentioned something concerned that customers might be offended or sensitive to the idea of being labeled as being permanently disabled. But that is not something that any of us have gotten any feedback on that I am aware of. If somebody has, then by all means chime in. But that is certainly not something that I have heard as any kind of a concern from our actual ridership. This is a system that would be documented by the medical professionals. They're saying it's permanent, not WMATA saying it's permanent. And it's an opt-in sort of a system anyway. Somebody has to choose to want to be thrown into that category. So I don't see how we're going to have any concerns about offending people. All right, next. So it is my recommendation, and I hope it is the recommendation of this committee, this subcommittee, that we believe that WMATA should adopt a streamlined 5-year recertification program for riders that have permanent disabilities. It's going to reduce barriers for the riders. It's going to improve administrative efficiency, hopefully, for the staff. It includes a robust set of standards and safeguards, and it aligns with what we're seeing as best practices in the rest of the country, as well as with the ADA and the FTA. So I see a lot of upside, not a lot of downside. I am happy to take questions and discussion. Otherwise, I say we move to last slide. As Paul suggested, I would like for us to vote
Hey,
in
keep that
support.
screen up at the end.
That's right. That's
I
where
promise.
we're sitting here until we have a discussion and a vote.
All right. So, Sarah, I want to thank you and whoever else have you put this together. It is so thoroughly well put and so well thought put into it. Given customer feedback, the sensitivity, everything. The only tiny little thing I would make a friendly amendment, not to the to what we're about to vote for, but in the presentation is currently eligibility does not only recertify for 3 years, but in certain circumstances every 5 years. And of course, you already clearly state that you want to move it to streamline five. But as they do right now, is every 3 years for conditionally eligible customers and every 5 years for certain administrative types of recertification. But of course, that doesn't really change it. I just want to make a note of that. It's not everyone is like every 3 years, it's three or five, depending on the circumstance. But beyond that, everything else is spot on. So if I don't hear any feedback for anyone, should we move to this motion here?
Chair Senator,
Yes.
this is Anu. We
Yeah.
do have two members with their hands up, Vanessa Coles and then Doug
Okay.
Fisher.
Paul, go
Thank
ahead.
you.
Paul, wait a minute.
Yes.
Hang on, Paul. Can we have a second on this? I'll second it for discussion.
Did we want to take Pat? Did we want to take the comments of the other people first
No, no,
and
no. No,
or
I'm
do the
just.
motion?
Oh, I'm sorry. I would go with the motion and then I'll second it and then we have discussion on the motion.
Okay. So the motion before us is the AAC, as I'm reading it on the screen, should formally recommend to WMATA that it adopt a, and we're going to move this to the AAC meeting that or we're going to see if we can move this to WMATA already, depending on what Pat says. The AAC should formally recommend to WMATA that it adopt a streamlined recertification process for Metro Access riders with permanent disabilities as described in the detailed proposal documented circulated on the 20th of October of 2025.
I'll second
Okay.
that.
All right. Now
now we're going
we're
to
on
have the
discussion. Yeah, good.
Okay, so the first person is Anu. Go ahead. Oh,
Person Vanessa Coles, followed by Debbie Fisher.
all right. Go ahead, Vanessa.
Okay, hi. This is Vanessa. I'm middle-aged African American. My hair is layered and I have on a maroon jumpsuit. So, it was an excellent, excellent research, Ms. Sarah. Very good. Everything really was answered. And you answered some of the things I was going to ask about anyway, and that is on fraud. When someone passes away, and they probably already have something to handle that, and it may not have anything to do with recertification, but how, so that the cards are not used again, how do they find out whether or not someone is deceased to stop sending, information of that? And you, I'm, and again, I'm sorry, you may not know the answer to this.
That's okay.
So
I'm sure
you
Mr. Blake does.
or one of the certification staff, usually someone, if they pass from what I've seen in the past, usually a family member or a friend would have contacted the eligibility office to let them know, so they can start
So
that
you okay?
process of removing them off the rolls. And once they've confirmed that they
Yeah.
are deceased, that's what I'm presuming.
Okay.
But I'm going to let Mr. Blake or whoever's from eligibility here on the call to confirm that.
Oh, yeah,
And
so
my one, my,
well,
okay.
go ahead, Ms. Coles.
The other simple one, and again, it may not have. What about the PCAs? Is there a process, or they, is there any, do they need to, PCAs, I guess, are flexible. They can assume or assign anyone to be their PCA. Will that have anything to do with, needing to, make sure that we have a set PCA, or again, it's kind of static. Anyone can be a PCA.
That's an excellent point.
And
I
that may
didn't
be a
address
Mr.
it at
Blake.
all,
Mr.
but basically, the way it is written in the longer document is that basically the eligibility would continue as it is. So it wouldn't change the status of whether somebody has a PCA or not. Whatever they do or they don't would continue unless somebody wanted to change that. But I will let Mr. Blake answer the question of whether it needs to be a specific person or not. I mean, if for me, it doesn't. It's if I have a PCA with me, I have a PCA with me. It doesn't matter who they are. But I'll let Mr. Blake give the proper answer.
Okay, yes.
Okay,
Good
thank
evening.
you.
Great questions, Ms. Coles. So on the first one, the fraud talk, that wasn't never the biggest. That was brought up, but it was never the biggest concern raised by Access Services. But the fraud piece would be, as you say, Mr. Chairman, Metro Access customer passes away. Generally, we will hear from a family member if for nothing other reason is to get a refund from their EasyPay account, let alone just let us know that they're no longer in need of the services. But in the event that a person doesn't let us know, then the fraud, if you will, is only with regard to those customers who recertify every 3 years, i.e., conditional eligible, because they have the digital, excuse me, not the digital, they have the tap card to enter and exit the system. That would be the only fraud per se, because the ID, they couldn't use Metro Access because the ID check would not match. The customers who are currently getting 5 year eligibility don't get the ID card. So is that the biggest concern in the world? No, but is it a factor? Yes. And I would just say on the process overall, other than the medical, because when this began, it was permanent eligibility. Now it's not necessarily permanent eligibility, and I think that was made pretty clear. So that changes things a bit. The 5 year That's up for discussion and debating. You guys should vote as you see fit. And I think when we look at what we're doing now already with administrative recertifications, it looks like the real only difference we really have at this point was or is the requirement for medical documentation when it comes to recertification. Because even now, even with a medical recertification, excuse me, administrative recertification, which means you do not have to come in for an interview or a functional assessment, we just look at your application, know your history, and grant you recertification automatically. That still does require a trip to the doctor. So I think we've come a long way getting closer. I, especially in 5 years, I would be very shocked that a person who's eligible for Metro Access does not attend a doctor's appointment for 5 years. So I'm not really understanding that part, but I don't know if that's the biggest debate point in the world at this point. Again, we started off with permanent eligibility. We've moved a little bit away from permanent eligibility into 5 year eligibility. Probably not, again, a cause to debate so much, but medical, again, I think that's where we come down to, and you should vote and advocate as you wish. It was a good presentation, and I wouldn't worry about the fraud so much. That's never been our biggest issue philosophically. So I think that's not the major issue at this point in time. And again, now the last question was the PCA. Yes, whoever you travel with, you book a trip with Metro Access, you can say that is your PCA. The only difference now is you get one PCA, if I'm not mistaken, you get one PCA if you're a conditionally eligible customer who gets a card. And that card only works up to 30 seconds after the Metro Access person has either tapped on the bus or tapped on the rail. But whoever you're riding on Metro Access with, if you designate that person as your PCA for that day, we accept your designation of that individual.
Mr. Blake, so this is Sarah again. Thank you for clarifying several of those things. That's actually really helpful. I would say, in terms of the medical appointments, of course, somebody's going to have an appointment within 5 years. The issue is the document has to be signed within, what is it, 30 or 60 days of the recertification. So that actually
60
makes it quite,
days.
makes it quite, which is quite a bit trickier than, if it was any time in 5 years, that would make it. then it wouldn't be that burdensome. And then, as you said, it has shifted a little bit, you're right, from sort of permanent eligibility, which was sort of what was raised in the Maryland law that was dealing with a different kind of a system. But what we actually heard from the different riders was, what is it that's so burdensome? And it was these going to the doctors, because it costs money to get to the doctors. It takes time out of your day. It's hard to schedule these appointments. Doctors are annoyed. It costs money for the doctor's appointments. It costs money for the fees. And again, for some people, that it really is a huge burden. So if we can remove a barrier, because it's basically a burden without a benefit. Metro isn't getting anything out of another report from the doctor saying the same thing over again. There's no help to the system in that sense.
Well, I hear you. I understand your position loud and clear. Absolutely.
All right. Next person, Anu, to speak.
Okay, so next we have is Debbie Fisher. Debbie, please unmute yourself and go ahead with your question.
Thank you. I want to thank Sarah. I think we've had this conversation over the years, and I think it's just so really helpful and important. In particular, for the folks with intellectual and developmental disabilities, those people who across the DMV who are participating in the Medicaid waiver actually have the medical documentation in the system in order to be eligible for the waiver. And I just wonder if that some if I guess I wonder why that couldn't be used in lieu of those doctor's appointments. Now, many of them are seeing their doctors on an annual basis, but the timing is off, and that administrative piece can be a huge glitch. But they have that medical documentation by definition in order to be able to be in the waiver receiving Medicaid money. So it really is redundant to ask them to go back and provide the medical documentation.
Thank you for that important point to share. Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else new from the AAC?
Chair Simon Ford, we do not have any additional hands up at this point.
So, can we call a question on this?
I'll call the question, Paul.
All right. All in favor, please do so by saying aye on this this motion.
Aye.
Aye.
Nays,
Aye.
abstention. All right, I see the ayes and the nays, abstentions. It looks like Pat and Sarah, this motion carries with this proposal. So, Pat, does this move to the AAC or do we move this straight up to?
No, let's move it to the AAC. We'll make sure it's on the agenda in January. Sarah, if you would like to just read the resolution, you don't need to talk about the proposal, reintroduce the proposal. And just if there are any questions, we'll answer it there. But I think we've got a resounding yes here. So we'll
Excellent.
just take the vote at the, which I'll let you know, you can introduce it and we'll take the vote at the AAC and then we'll move it up.
Sounds good.
Excellent, excellent job, Sarah. Thank you, Paul.
Sarah, thank you for all your wonderful work. We are so appreciative of this, and so are the customers. And we're going to see what happens. Hopefully, great things happens with this and changes, hopefully. Miss Anderson, you are up next with our, it's that time of year of winter will be in about less than a week. We already got a little touch of snow, and I'm sure you have you between you, Mr. Blake, and the director have information to share as to what Metro Access will and will not do, and things the call center will and will not do during inclement weather in the service. So I'll keep my mouth shut and not steal your thunder. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mrs. Semmelfort. Again, good afternoon, everyone. Just a couple of items to share with the committee and others as it relates to inclement weather and Metro Access service. So, Metro Access may make service modifications during severe weather events, or when there are hazardous conditions or other emergency situations. Examples of some severe weather include icy roads, snow accumulation, like we had a little dusting in the recent 24 hours, high winds and tornadoes. Those are just some examples of severe weather where we may make service modifications. During such conditions, door-to-door service may revert to curb-to-curb service. We also ask customers to make sure their path from the exterior door to their location, to the pickup location, is clear for safe door-to-door service as applicable. Again, if the pathway from the exterior door to their pickup location is not clear, service may revert to curb-to-curb service. It is also important to note that Metro Access primarily operates in neighborhoods and secondary streets, unlike Metro bus routes that primarily operate on main thoroughfares. Thus, during severe weather, the neighborhoods and secondary streets, unfortunately, are not the priority to clear and maintain for safe travel by local jurisdictions. If conditions warrant, service may be curtailed to return trips only or suspended altogether. Metro Access does not take curtailing service lightly, and will look to keep service going unless by doing so jeopardizes the well-being of our customers while using public transportation or our vehicle operators in executing the service needs. Metro Access changes will be announced via a variety of communication mediums, such as Metro Alert messages on local radio, television, the Metro Access phone system, and Metro's website, WMATA.com. We try to accommodate as much as possible customer requests to change their travel window if we see an impending weather event forthcoming. There are times when Metro Access will reach out to customers via phone to request time window changes, as well as should a severe weather event warrant. Thus, it is important that customers maintain their customer profile via eligibility with their current, also with their current phone number for point of contact. So it's very important if you do have a change in your phone contact to contact the eligibility office and make sure that phone number change or contact change is made on your customer profile. So that concludes my presentation or tips regarding inclement weather and impacts via the Metro Access service. And I'm welcome to take any questions, should anyone have any.
First famous question, just to confirm, is on those severe weather inclement days, Metro Access, if customers need to, there'll be leniency in terms of late cancellations on those days. And if it's feasible, a customer makes a request, say, "Hey, my job is shutting down earlier." If it's feasible on the system, and depending on circumstances, may customers may requested earlier window to be put up saying, "Hey, my work site is closing very soon." Given that, they call in advance that they may be able to accommodate, but that's not guaranteed. I just wanted to find that out.
Yes, absolutely. So yes, if we do practice leniency on late cancellations and no-shows and the like during severe weather events, we understand that it's a fluid situation and people are making the best decision that they know for themselves to make sure that they're in a safe location. And also to your second point, yes, if we can accommodate and get you picked up earlier, we will certainly do that. Ms. Coles?
Go ahead, Ms. Coles.
Yes, thank you. On the top end, the pickup, when there's a 2 hour delay or something, how is that handled? Could you go over that, please?
Oh, with the 2 hour delay, again, to Mr. Semmelsford's point, if we can accommodate, we certainly will. But again, it's not guaranteed. So if we can accommodate, we certainly will do that. We can
Okay.
work with customers to work out any changes.
And I make a suggestion to
Okay.
people, if you have knowledge that these the weather delays are going to happen, please, I would suggest you call as early as possible before those peak hours and see if the accommodation can be made as possible. Give as much notice as possible, like an hour or two beforehand. It might be very challenging for them, Metro Access, to call center to accommodate, but maybe if you know by like that, early morning or the night before, that's, call as soon as you get wind.
Absolutely. Any other questions from the group?
This is Sandy Newsell. This is more logistics on your end that might be in sort of transparent to us, but do you got to look out for the safety of the folks who work in the call center. Do you also have folks who are working from home these days? I know during, I'm not quite sure how the logistics work. You know, would your call center people be all headed home and it would make it that much harder for customers to reschedule?
I could answer that question.
Sure.
So, I know what reservations and where's my ride. If the situation for safety warrants and they make that determination, yes, that might happen, but that's only under very specific circumstances. Go ahead, Miss Allison, Miss Anderson. Oops.
Thank you, Mrs. Silverport. So normally, when severe weather events are, on the horizon, we normally know ahead of time, so we can make adjustments as it relates to whether or not our staff is there at the office or working remotely. So having that flexibility, there was a time way, way back when we did not have that flexibility, but we do now, and it's very important because we do take into account the safety of our agents and people that support the service. So most definitely, we'll make that call probably early on if we feel that would be necessary to make sure that we have as much resources to support the service.
Thank you. I guess that was my long-winded way of asking, can your staff still work remotely? And the answer is yes.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
The ultimate thing is we want to have, especially during those days, the phone lines open and staff customers have access to staff. And if they are granted that allows that to happen on those critical days so those calls can get through for those two major functions.
Absolutely.
Any other questions for Ms. Anderson about this very important topic as we go through this service? Maybe Ms. Anderson, you want to talk about on, you know, if there's because I know there's been some times in which what would happen if we have a day of inclement weather and things are service has to be suspended and you know what happens or if you know on those days I know what's happened but you know what should if customers are going out in the community what some you know precautions or things they need to take and what happens if they're caught up in it and in the vehicle with a driver on those days or to you know things to consider when weather begins like that either for a pickup or getting picked up or you're already on the vehicle you know just some of those things to consider.
Yeah, I mean, just like anyone that may need to travel during a time of inclement weather, you want to make sure that you have everything that you need just in case, right? But also, it's an individual type of decision, and you want to always err on the side of safety. We're going to always err on the side of safety, right? And hopefully our customers also have that inclination. So unless you really, really, I mean, if it's really treacherous out there, unless you really, really have to go, I would encourage folks just to, think about that. Do you really need to be out there on the road? But if you do, we are going to be again trying to operate service as safely as we can, but keeping in mind the safety of our customers as well as the safety of our vehicle operators. So if we can operate service out there and do it safely, Metro Access is going to be operating service.
And do understand customers, just to put out there that again, during these inclement weather days, it will not be seat to door service because it's however the driver may deem things at a given time if they can do it safely. And also understand that if they do operate service during these inclement weather days, get me wrong, Miss Anderson or anyone else on this screen, yes, you have a pickup window, but because you are going out there and waiting to be picked up, or your time to get picked up might be much longer than expected because things have to be done in a safe manner, and you need to be prepared and adjust accordingly for that, that you might be riding a long time or you might be waiting a long time. Abilities Ride is very limited, if not non-existent, and extremely limited, let me shall say, during those times. And you want to consider your own independence and safety during the inclement weather with Abilities Ride too. I'm just putting that out there.
All righty.
All right. If there's nothing else from the committee members, or admin team, management team here, thank you, Miss Anderson, for your presentation.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
All right. Next, we are going to talk about Uber. I saw Mr. Hackshaw on the screen. It is time to see your wonderful, wonderful face and invite you back to talk about some suggestions and improvements. As we know, Uber has been a wonderful abilities ride option and tool for a lot of us in terms of flexible and convenience. It does require some level of independence. We know right now that there's still some a few technical issues a lot of us are working through, which has caused a lot of the, most of the comprises probably I'm going to say, Mr. Blake, roughly a quarter, if not half, of the calls that come into the call center. As you know, Mr. Blake and his team has worked on getting us those who are chosen for Uber in the random lottery system the night before. We get links the night before. If you're, you go online, you look through the app, and you see your trip, selected Metro Access trip is on Uber for the next day. Obviously, there's been it one big major thing is issues where, like such as myself, we get sometimes we may get all the links. Sometimes, because I'm looking at the app, I may only get. So this usually fall in two camps. I may get the link where it's says the second half, by taking this ride and that verbiage, but it doesn't on the first pass sends the link itself. It only comes the next day when Uber sends that reminder, and that's why customers are calling in. Oh, I didn't get my link. That's one scenario. Or this scenario is it comes in from certain some trips and it doesn't come at all. And from what I hear from Mr. Blake, he's been telling us is that we may have a solution and ha hopefully everything in one place in the Uber app. So go ahead, Mr. Hackshaw, as I present this to you. Hopefully I described it correctly, Mr. Blake, some of the scenarios.
Sounds good. Yes, let's let Kevin give us
Yeah,
some
I was just setting the
help.
scene here.
I mean, no pressure, Paul. No pressure. All right. So, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Kevin Hackshaw. Black male, dreadlocks, glasses, wearing a black hoodie. So, all right. First off, I want to say to guys, I see Pat is on the call. And I know I want to address this before we go any further into the deck or anything else. We have been.
Oh, one last thing we do want to
Okay.
address is the fact with trips where, we hit the link and it's looking, and then in the past we used to be able to, if it says, no cars available, hit another link in five, by this time to reset it again. The other issue is it says, call WMATA, and then of course we're all calling to WMATA during peak times, and that takes a bit. So those two major issues. I'm sorry. Go
All right.
ahead.
So I know one of the things that we wanted to address, because I know, like I said, Pat is on the call and there are other people on the call who have had issues with addresses, specifically vehicles going to the wrong place, or it's not quite on the address. So we are working on it. Pat, I should have you straightened out by the end of the week for the latest in terms of getting your address updated. To the people who have sent Christian, Mr. Blake information,
to get it updated. We should have everybody updated by end of week. If you're still having issues, please let Mr. Blake know, and we will go ahead and get that. We'll go ahead and address it again. I apologize that it's taken so long. Part of it was we were trying to look at our system from our end and determine if this was a system-wide issue. Is this something that we just need to address step by step or instance by instance versus did we need to really go back into our programming and really take a long, hard look at what we're doing? We're still trying to figure that out, unfortunately. We're a large company, and there are times where sometimes things take a little bit longer than expected. So in the interim, if you have a situation where your address is not where you're getting picked up or dropped off, please let Mr. Blake know. Mr. Blake will send me an email and we will get it addressed. Once we get it addressed, we'll let him know so he can then let the customer know. So hopefully that should address one of the issues. One of the things that I wanted to do today, and I don't know if we're going to address all of the issues today, to be quite honest with you, Paul, what I wanted to do was really kind of give an overview of how we work with WMATA. And specifically, some of the things that we're doing, because I think part of, I don't want to say people have misconceptions, but I think it helps when people understand how we work with the agency, what we can and what we cannot do, how we work with the drivers and make sure that they're doing their best to assist passengers. I think when we put all of that information out there for educating our customer base, I think it goes a long way to helping you, the customer, the rider, understand where we're coming from. Are we anywhere near where we want to be in terms of giving best level of service? We're not there yet. It's a daily journey. It's something that we work on a regular basis. We appreciate, and believe me, we actually really appreciate it when you bring it to our attention, because if we don't know, we can't fix it. So, don't, please, Christian, please don't hate me for this, but if you have issues, please let Mr. Blake know, because he will then in turn let me know. And if I know, then we're going to work on it. If we don't know, I can't help you. So, with that being said, let me go ahead. I'll start the deck. I left some time at the end for Q&A. If you do have questions while we're going through the deck, Paul, I don't know how you want to do this in terms of do we interrupt while we're going through the deck or do we just wait for Q&A? What's the best way for us to do that?
And so go through your presentation, then we're going to have Q&A.
Okay, cool. All right, works for me. Excellent. All right, so let me go ahead and share. All right, can everyone see my deck?
Yes, we can see
Okay,
it.
great. Thank
Yes.
you. I tried to keep the graphics pretty simple, not get, there are some pages with some images and pictures. I also have a video that will show briefly. But I will go ahead and share the deck at the end of this. So if you need to, go through it on your own time, at your leisure, feel free as well. So, all right. So my agenda today, there's two big things that I really wanted to get across to everybody here is how we support WMATA. And there are two ways that we do this, really. There are a number of driver resources that we provide to assist drivers, to give them education, to help them be their best in terms of assisting this community. And then there are a ton of rider resources. And so we want to make sure that people are aware that you have these resources. There are some new things that we've introduced that I know Mr. Blake is excited about, that we're excited about. And so we're excited to show you as well and get your feedback as well. So, and then of course, like I said, we'll have Q&A after. So I guess the first thing that I want people to realize is that we do engage the disability community. All of our agencies, across the country, we are having conversations on a regular basis. We do have a service animal working group in-house. We have proactive engagement with the American Council for the Blind, with the National Federation for the Blind. We work with a number of training centers, and we spend a lot of time in our user experience tools and feedback forums with, it's 2000. I know it's more than 2000 because this is a little bit dated. So we talk to a lot of users with service animals. And so we try to get as much feedback as possible. And you'll see that reflected in some of the tools that we've implemented in terms of the Uber app, and other things. So I just want people to know that we really try to make sure that we're really getting that feedback to do what we need to do to help customers. So driver resources, we'll start with that. So there are two things. As a driver, Remember, they're not an official employee. They are free. They're contract labor, really. So there are certain things we can ask them to do. There are certain things we cannot make them do. We can provide the education. We can ask them to read it. We can ask them to review it. We cannot force a driver to review the education piece. However, if something were to come up, for example, if there was a service animal incident, the driver is still responsible for, regardless of if they reviewed the material. If they did not review the material, it's their responsibility to do so. So if, for instance, there was a situation where driver drove right past you because they saw you had a service animal, they can't come back and turn and say, well, I never saw it. The materials are there for them to review and to use. If they don't use it, they are held to the same standard as everyone else. So with that being said, we do provide a website for drivers to use. And so let me click into that. Okay. And so this is available to them, and there are a number of pieces to it. We have a lot of tips from the Open Doors organization. We try to really get across the fact of how do you talk to this community with empathy? How do you make sure that they feel as welcome as anyone else coming into your vehicle, and that there's always that feeling that we want them there? And so we want to make sure that we have top ways you can help. Making sure you ask questions. There's nothing wrong in asking a question, as long as it's done with respect, as long as it's done politely. So all of these things, and there are some questions we know you can't ask, but the questions that you can ask, feel free to ask, because it helps you in terms of understanding that customer that's about to enter your vehicle. And it helps the customer understand that, you may have a question, you may be unsure about something. So again, all of these pieces are available for riders to use, and for riders to be able to, again, make you feel as welcome and as welcome as we can make you feel jumping into their vehicle. We also have a video, and this is part of the education series for drivers. I'm hoping the audio works. Let me know if y'all can hear this when it starts.
Uber is a platform that welcomes everyone, including riders with service animals. A service animal is trained to assist a person with a disability. A service animal can be dogs of any breed or size. A rider with a service animal may not appear to you to have a disability because not all disabilities are visible. It's against the law to deny a ride to a person because of their service animal. This is also Uber's policy that all drivers agree to in order to earn on the Uber platform. Fear of dogs, allergies, or religious objections to dogs are not valid reasons to deny a ride or exceptions under Uber's policy. If you're unsure about whether or not a rider's dog is a service animal, you can always ask, is the dog a service animal required because of a disability? And what task has the animal been trained to perform? There is no requirement that a service animal wear a tag, vest, or be registered. Please do not assume that a person saying they have a service animal does not have a disability just because it isn't obvious. Riders are not required to present documentation to drivers to prove that their dog is a service animal or that they have a disability. If you're concerned about keeping your car clean, consider using seat covers, towels, or blankets to cover your seats or floor. Service animals aren't pets. It's best not to touch or distract a service dog unless a rider gives permission. Service animals will typically sit on the floor or a rider's lap. Since service animals often need to be close to their owner in order to complete the tasks for which they have been trained, riders should not be separated from their service dog or be asked to place their service dog in the trunk or cargo area of the car. As a reminder, it's against the law to refuse to transport riders with service animals. Drivers who discriminate against riders because of their service animal are breaking the law and will lose their ability to use the driver app. Thank you for doing your part to keep the Uber platform a welcoming place for riders with disabilities.
So that's just an example of one of the training pieces that we have for all of our drivers to make sure that they understand what's expected of them. Denise, I see that you raised your hand. Per Paul, you'll be the first person that we call on as soon as Q&A opens up, if that's okay. All right. Okay. So there we go. Okay. So some of the more WMATA driver resources that we do have the Global Safety Education Team, and again, that video is an example of that. But we've also recently created a series of short educational modules for the drivers, and again, it's designed to help drivers safely and respectfully assist riders with disabilities. We also, making sure that they're there and they're doing the same thing for older adults as well. And the content covers everything from community guidelines, understanding disabilities, and really most importantly, how they might impact a rider's thinking, their behavior, mobility, or communication, and trying to really get into that space of understanding them a lot better. How to provide safe and respectful communication and safety tools and resources. And so we also do a number of quizzes and tests to make it more fun for them to learn as they go along as well. So some of the other pieces, we do in-app messaging. And so what you'll see is drivers will get messages in-app. Part of it is about the user. For example, with this one, it's the service animal policy, and just reminding them at times that if you refuse to pick up a passenger with a service animal, that is a federal offense. You can lose your right to drive through the app if you do that. We have quarterly communications, which again goes out and reinforces, and you'll probably see this repeated over and over. A lot of it is just reinforcement, making sure that drivers understand what they're supposed to be doing and how they're supposed to be doing it. So, also, this last one is really important. This is the Uber Pet opt-out reminder. There are times when a driver will opt out of a ride, and there are times when they may not know. They may not know that this is a service animal ride. And so when something like that happens, they'll get this pop-up on the app about our service animal policy, and this applies to all trips. It's kind of giving them a little bit of a heads up that, hey, you know what, maybe this is a ride you don't want to opt out of. There's other rides you may want to opt out of. This may not be the one. So, all right, so we'll jump right into rider resources, which I think there's a lot more stuff in here in terms of how we support riders. So first of all, we launched the self-ID rider experience. So I don't know if anybody's jumped into this or has taken a look at this yet or might have seen it on their own, but this allows users to set their preferences. So in terms of you can set your accessibility preferences, you can say that you have a service animal. And so to do that, there's an eligibility form that you fill out. It's really quick, it's very easy. You don't have to send in any documentation. And then you can share those preferences on the app. So in terms of the driver would then get a heads up, for example, that you do have a service animal. They'll know this ahead of time that there is a service animal that is going to be with you. And at the same time, you can also delete all of that information very easily. If you don't want to share that information, you don't have to. We want to just make sure that you have the option in the event that you want to share that. And you want to make sure that the driver has a heads up and knows ahead of time that there is a service animal that will be with you for that ride. What else? So we also implemented Simple Mode. Simple Mode makes it a lot easier to use the app. So for instance, you'll see on all of these screens that we've made the home screen simpler. So it's not as, I don't want to say cluttered because I don't think it's cluttered, but there's a lot of stuff going on. And so making it easier for someone to be able to see at a glance what they need, is just something that makes it a lot easier for a lot of folks to use. If you look at the location editor, it takes out a lot of the additional information and makes it very focused and very clear. Same thing for the product selector on the far right-hand side, where you have a number of choices. And let's make it as easy as possible to for somebody to make that choice, for them to understand what they're looking at, and then in turn make it easier for them to make the choice. Now, of course, this is available since I think this summer. So it should have rolled out. Actually, no, I know it's rolled out by now because this should have been available since June of 2025. And this is great for if you're using it for a WMATA abilities ride or you're using it on your own. It just makes it a lot easier to help you get where you're going faster and easier. All right. And for a simple mode, you can turn it on via your app settings. And it's really simple. Four presses. You go to your account, go to settings, select accessibility, and you can toggle simple mode on and off. And of course, you can always have somebody else help you. If you have a family group, they can actually go in remotely and they can set that up for you as well. Some other options we have as well. We do support writers that are blind or have low vision. We have iOS VoiceOver and we have Android TalkBack. And we also have wireless braille display capability. You can set up trusted contacts in the event that something happens. These people will be contacted for you. You can share trip status with these folks as well. So it makes it a lot easier. It just makes you safer in terms of other people may know where you're going, if you want them to know, of course. And of course, again, going back to supporting folks that are deaf or hard of hearing, there is assistive technology such as visible and vibrating alerts as well. So those are all options you have within the app, within the accessibility features. So this is the big one that I think was really exciting, which is unlinked guest rider support. So we know that about 40% of riders on Uber currently, they're not using the app. They're not linked into the app. So now what happens is if you're not on the app, but you get the text message, it's a little bit harder to make contact, to have conversations, to reach out to Uber because you're not in the app. And so what we've done now is we've actually enabled guest riders to now be able to contact Uber support directly. So if there's an issue, you can actually now reach out without the app. After a trip concludes, that rider will receive a unique support link via SMS. So you'll get that text message. If there's an issue, you can reach out. And of course, this applies to rides that are completed, rides that are canceled by the rider, or unfulfilled. So again, you had a situation where you think the driver drove past you because you had a service animal. You're going to get that text message. You're going to be able to reach out and start that process even faster. Now, I'm not saying that don't reach out to Mr. Blake and let him know that this happened because you're going to need to get a replacement ride, but you're going to be able to reach out to us and get that process started and investigated earlier. There's information like the SMS will contain a message like if you need assistance with your Uber ride, contact, and the link is under there. When you jump into the link, it will take you to that page where you can then make that complaint or make that comment that you need to. All right. So a little bit more on that. And so the link, when you jump into it, it will take you to a form and of course fill out the required fields, you accept the terms, and then submit the request. It's that simple. You will get an automatic email reply, so you will know that we have gotten your request and your form and your feedback, and an agent will follow up via email. So if you don't get a response as usual, let us know because mistakes always get made. We know this, it happens in life. If you don't get a response back, we need to know so we can follow up on it. So again, same thing for like lost items. You may be re redirected to a chat experience. And so the reason for that is if you've lost something in a vehicle, yes, you can fill out the form and send it in and get an email back, but you've lost something that your cell phone or somebody's cell phone or a device or something that's left, you want to make sure that you're taking care of it as quickly as possible. And from our end, the sooner that we receive that information from a customer is the quicker we can contact that driver and get that driver to get in touch with the customer and return that item. So we do have chat experiences set up in there as well. Just a few more things before we jump into the Q&A. Just in case you didn't know, there is a dedicated place in the app as well, if you're using the app, where a rider can quickly learn about key safety information. You can access 911, share your location, do a lot of these other things. So another thing that we also have, if you're clicking on that blue shield, you can now do guest rider 911 text messaging. And actually, let me back up a little bit. This is kind of tied to the unlinked riders. So the riders that don't have the app, you can also contact emergency assistance mid-trip. So you will have the option to text 911 because previously you would have to call. And there are situations where you may be in a vehicle and you don't feel safe making a phone call to 911. This will allow you going forward, you'll have the option to text 911 via a web page. And so, again, trying to make it a little bit easier, a little bit more efficient for users to use our system. All right. So, again, a little bit more, just making it easier. You will get report safety issue. if you're using on the app, and I know I've gone back and forth a little bit, but if you're in the app, you will be able to easily report those issues or safety incidents while on a trip. But we want to make sure that you can do it easily outside of the app as well. Also, if you don't want to use the app, and we're not saying you have to, it would be great if you downloaded the app because it makes it easier. But if you don't, you still have the option, like I said, to do the text messaging. You can always call us. There's a live support line. And you can go back when you get home, get on your computer, and you can also report that complaint or make that comment online as well. So there are multiple ways you can do it. And finally, you can do it in social media as well. Facebook, Instagram, X, all of those, you can reach out to Uber support and you can get assistance. So what happens when that comes to us, when we get that complaint or that issue? We have a 14-member team, and all they do, this is it, all they do is support for users who experience a service denial that may be related to discrimination. These folks are trained on the ADA Act, service animal rights, safety issues, sensitive communication. This is all they do all day. And so this is something that we're trying to expand it as well, and make it bigger and make sure that they're responding back in a timely fashion. But we're really happy that we have this team in place that can, you're not going through regular service. This goes directly when Mr. Blake sends in a request about a service animal denial, it goes to this team. And so they reach out immediately. Hopefully, none of you on the call have had that issue, but if you have, I know they're reaching out really quickly. I know that hopefully they have gotten you to a better place in terms of making sure that you were taken care of. So, all right. With all that said, I know it was a lot, and I know I only have 20 minutes, so I wanted to make sure that I got to that as well as answer the questions. Denise, you are first up because I know you had your hand up from the presentation.
Just one thing before
Oh, sure.
Denise begins in a new kind of house with hands. Remember, this is only for Uber related type of questions. Because we do have to get the customer comment period, which begins shortly around 5:30. But so just keep in mind, we're going to have you back again because I know you can't respond today. We are also hopefully, I know you're working on the issues of, us, sometimes getting links, not getting links, the issues of geocoding. I do want to say with geocoding, sometimes there are some locations that have one or two zip codes that makes the difference. And I found it out in trial and error, whether or not for the same address, it has two zip codes. One gets you right in front of the location, and one maybe a quarter of a mile or somewhere else. So those things just to kind of keep in mind. And I think Mr. Blake, we were kind of expecting today, and maybe you can do in a future presentation, if there was a way within the Uber app as an option where if we have trips assigned to Uber for that given day, we can see it all in one place, the trips that you're in the works of developing some kind of solution for those customers who are able to do that, that'd be much appreciated.
Yep. And Paul, I'll be honest with you. There are some things that we're working on for 26. I don't want to, I'm a believer in saying less and providing more. And so when I say that, I don't want to put stuff out there in terms of this is coming in 2026 and not know exactly
No, I know you want to field test it first
yeah,
and
exactly.
see and make sure it works before presenting it to the general public as this is a viable option for you.
That's it exactly. I'm a big believer in making sure that it has gone through all of the tests. Probably what we would end up doing is using a smaller group within Abilities Ride to see if it works. So there's a number of things that I don't want to throw out there just yet. They're coming. Mr. Blake knows that we've discussed some of these things, but until I really have confirmation as to when in 2026 we're going to have it and have a better idea of how we're going to roll it out, I don't want to throw it out there just yet, if that's okay.
Okay, not a problem. All right, and with that, Anu, do you have any hands for anyone related to Uber related questions? Because remember, we're timing this for about less than 10 minutes because we want to get customer comment period opens close to 5:30 or
So
shortly
we have
thereafter.
four people with their hands up. First is Miss Rush, Denise Rush. Next is Tuan Farmer, and then Vanessa Coles, and then Pat Sheehan. Miss
All
Rush.
right. Go ahead, Miss Rush.
This is Denise Rush. My question is to Mr. Blake. We had vehicles that had that held two wheelchairs, and you stepped up to get onto that vehicle. What happened to those vehicles?
They're still around. Two of them are in operation. Some others are based are being held right now for a recall of the manufacturer. But two of them are still in service. But right now, the vast majority of them are being held as we await delivery of the others and clearance of the what is it called? The recall from the manufacturer.
Okay, so they are going to come out.
Yeah, they've been out. There was a recall, so out of safety precaution, we're waiting for the recall clearance and whatever fixes they say you should engage in. Two of the vehicles are out and in service because they're not part of the recall, but the other ones are, so we're just holding them out of caution right now.
Okay, because and you fixed the things that you had us come out there and look at them, and we told you the things that we were concerned about. You fixed those things?
Yes, those are in the process of being adjusted. I remember Sandy had a couple of recommendations and a few others. So those things, then that's separate from the recall, but those things are, have been taken under advisement and they're being addressed individually as resources become available.
Okay, now, how many of those vehicles did you purchase? It's been over a
50.
year. It's been
It's
quite
50.
a while. How many?
50.
Okay, and so
They're not a bulk
you're.
of our, they're not a major significant aspect of our fleet. They're an important and symbolic aspect, but they're not a major numerical factor in our overall fleet.
Denise, did you have any more comments? Because we have to get to other Uber-related comments in this presentation.
I'm finished.
Thank you for your comments. Anu next.
Next is Tawan Farmer.
Good afternoon, Paul. I'm pulling into a parking garage just in case I'm lost. Okay, so first, Mr. Hackshaw, good presentation, information.
So Juan, you're kind of in and out. Okay. Are you still there? Oh, that's why you pull into a parking lot. All
I think we lost them.
right. We'll get back to him. Oh,
The
Juan,
blind
we.
user, I clearly understood. And let me go through this area. This is where it always happens. Probably going to bump testing. No, I think it's going to mute.
We can hear
Right.
you. Tuan, we can hear you.
Come on,
Can
still there?
you hear me?
We can.
Yes.
Okay, my signal, I knew it was going to break up right at that spot. So first, Mr. Hackshaw, great presentation. The piece I was referring to was about the support message regarding service animals. I very much understood that. It clearly made sense to me as a person with disability, blindness specifically. And I'm just going to be as transparent as I can.
Of course,
I
please.
am concerned that there are drivers who, whether it's cultural or linguistic reasons, are challenged in understanding that message. Do we have individuals in place who can convey that either in a form of language translation or verbally to drivers what that message legally actually means?
You know what? That's a good question. And I don't want to jump in and say something that I'm not 100% sure. I can reach out to one of our specialists there and get that information and respond back in either the next meeting, or I can let Mr. Blake know and he can pass that information on. Is that okay?
Okay. That's fine with me. Second question, and then I'll be done, is more of a suggestion. This has not been discussed under the AAC or the Metro Access Subcommittee. I understand because of HIPAA rules, regarding, health and all that kind of stuff. You can't tell a person, "Hey, I have a disability," this and that and the other. And I know that we've started, Uber has started putting out that message regarding what you or I as a driver, a rider can reveal regarding the service animal. My question is, and this is my personal suggestion, from the other side of the coin, if a driver has a medically identified issue regarding transporting a service animal, not just I don't want to, but an actual medical reason, could there not be behind the scenes a electronic notification? I mean, we're talking about Uber, we're talking about technology here, where that person can put something on record with official channels saying, "Hey, we've noted this on your file." And when a person identifies that they have a service animal, the two individuals are never matched anyway, so that issue does not come up.
So a couple of things, and I think part of it is we try as much as possible to hold to the letter of the law. And because this is a federal issue in terms of if you are refused, we don't want to put ourselves in a position where somebody's trying to game the system by saying, well, I can't do it because XYZ, and then you have to go get a doctor's note. And it's a lot easier to just say, look, this is the rule. This is the law from this is US law. This is what it is. I suspect that there aren't very many of those situations that occur. So that's why we haven't put the investment into making, like you said, hey, I would never be matched with this person because of this situation. So yeah, I think that's part of it. But we tend to err more on the side of this is the letter of the law than trying to find a way for, I don't want to say just for a driver to game the system, but for them to be able to opt out of doing it because that just opens up a whole other can of worms.
I understand. Thank you very much.
Not a problem. Thank you.
Okay, and next is Vanessa Coles. Vanessa, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Great presentation. Thank you. I enjoy the service. I am a blind individual, and for the most part, the Uber drivers have been very nice to me, getting out of the car and assisting. But my question is, can they tell that they have ability ride trips? I've been told by one driver the screen turns blue or something, so they know. Because the reason I ask, because where I live is in a cul-de-sac, and in the middle is Visitor Alley, where they, extra parking. And they tend to stop when the meter tells them they've arrived, which is always on the other side of the alley from my house. So if they don't call me, I may hear or not hear the motor, and I'm waving and I'm shouting, and sometimes my neighbors are coming out because they haven't called me to let me know, so we can have a jargon to let them know where I am, because they usually the back of their car is facing me, so they're not looking ahead to see where I am. So I've been having problems with that, especially Saturday. With the driver being on the other side of the island and me not being able to connect with him. So someone did help me. So I'm just curious, do they know that they have ability? Because the message I'm getting is saying, please call the driver upon, I mean, the rider upon arrival, it has my telephone number in there. Some of them may even text, which it's hard for me to switch screens to try to get to a place where I can text the person. I try to memorize the telephone number so I can call them myself. But that's basically my question. And then at the end, I don't always get an option to rate the driver. I did for the first time on Saturday, and I didn't get any response. I don't know if someone got that or not, but I was very disappointed with that driver. And I did go through and fill out different areas, but where does it go from there? Because I never heard back from my review of that driver.
Interesting. Okay. We can take a deeper look at that. One thing I would tell you, one of the tips and tricks in terms of if you ever have a ride with a driver that is unsatisfactory and you never want to get matched with that driver again, go ahead and give them a 1-star rating and you will never be matched with that driver ever again. It automatically declines that driver. So just a little tip, in the app, just go ahead and make sure you give them 1-star and that automatically happens. I don't
Yeah, I did for that one, but I don't always get that option. I don't know, it's because something they're clicking on that activates it, but I don't always get it. And I understand too, they rate us. So maybe is that why also that we may be a while for us to get a ride because they're rating us? Because I've had a driver to actually tell me the only reason why he picked me up was because of my rating.
If you don't mind me asking, what's your rating?
Well, I guess they get to rate us as well. What kind
Yeah,
of person we were.
well, they get to rate you, but your rating is reflected as your if you look at your app, it'll be out of 5. So you rate them out of 5,
Right.
and it's accumulated. It's cumulative, and it's the same thing on your end. So, for example, I have I think a 4.89, which is decent. It's pretty good. But if you're in a 4.9 or 4.91, that's even better. And so drivers in turn will look at that driver that look at that rider's rating sometimes, and they'll make decisions based off of that. They won't know if it's an abilities ride. They don't know. I don't know what that guy was telling you, but we don't tell drivers that it's an abilities ride customer. If you put in on the app that you self-identify with a service animal, that will pop up because it's part of your record and it will show up that you have a service animal. But if you don't put that in, the driver doesn't know. And a driver, to be honest, doesn't have to. What they have to do is when they see you there, they need to stop, they need to pick you up. That's at the end of the day, that's all that needs to happen. I'm not sure why you're not getting the when the ride is over and the driver ends that ride, the ability feedback should pop up automatically.
Right. I don't always get it. I did that Saturday, and that's why I filled it out. But anyway, maybe I have to dig deeper or keep scanning
It
through
might be
to
a settings
find it.
issue. It might be a settings issue. I'd also advise always double check and make sure that you're using the latest version of the app. So always double check to make sure there are no updates that you need to download as well.
Okay. All right.
All right. Thank you so much, Anu. Next
Okay,
person. Before we go to
so
customer
let's
comment,
see.
come here.
Next person is Patrick Sheehan. Pat.
Hey, Kevin, thank you. Listen, let's see. I sent you and Mr. Blank a note right a half hour before the meeting. Joda Phillips, who is on that list, is frustrated, and he wanted to let you know he was willing to go and escalate this because he's not getting any answers that he can work with. I understand you said you're going to work with things
I'll
through
give him a
Friday.
call directly.
I will let Joe know to give you a couple more days and get back with Joe. There's a couple other people on that list. Mr. Blake, I'm sure between you and Kevin, you know who these people are. And
Sure.
if you can let them know personally where things stand, that would be great going forward.
Will do.
Great.
But
Okay.
also, can I ask though, when you say he's frustrated, escalate, what is the customer frustrated about?
So Joe is frustrated because he's been dealing with this since October. He has not seen that there's been any progress, and it's been over 2 months, and he
Okay.
doesn't see
And
anything happening.
does he recognize that Uber is not an entitlement? It's not.
No. He gets that. I know he gets that.
Okay.
But technically, why should something like this take 2 months?
Well, again,
But.
when he uses his personal, and I'm not using this to talk about the customer, I'm trying to educate the broader point. If there's a customer who can use their personal Uber app and they can go, I would like to find that out. I mean, because this kind of goes to the challenges that happens when public agencies try to do something good. And I don't know if using the Uber app on a personal account would not result in the address challenge that the customer has faced. I certainly would like to know that. Is there a difference? This kind of goes to Vanessa's question. And Vanessa, I would just say I've taken dozens of mystery rides. I've heard this. I've heard it from Barbara Millville, who works for Metro. Oh, they know it's a Metro Access trip, and so they don't want to take it. I'm not sure about that, and I've taken dozens of mystery rides to try to prove or disprove that thesis. But I just ask customers, 2 months is not an eternity. The
Well,
team
I
is
know.
working on
But
things.
let me just ask
And
this,
I
Radha.
would just like, let me just finish, Mrs.
Okay.
Shan.
All
I
right.
would just say to customers, when we're talking about a promotion, when we're talking about something that's not required by the ADA, when we're talking about something that is not part of your civil right entitlement, and we're trying to incorporate first and foremost for accessibility and then other challenges that may face us, please be patient. The other answer, of course, is to just use Metro Access.
Okay, right. I understand that. So my other suggestion would be going back to something that you said. If an individual takes this particular ride on his own account and gets there, but then takes the ride with Abilities Ride, which is, I've also heard of this, and it gets messed up, does Abilities Ride use the same maps as an individual on his own account? Is it the same?
Here's what I found, and that's why I want to know about the
Right, and I
situation.
agree with you.
Yeah,
Yes.
so here's what happens, at least, and Kevin can correct me from my own quote unquote
And
testing.
in
When we
spy
run,
41, we
wait
do
a minute,
need to
yeah,
get the customer comment. Paul.
I'm gonna be real quick. When I use Uber on my own, I'm using the Uber and it's tracking me just like these cell phones track everything we do. Our privacy is totally gone with these cell phones. But the Uber map at the time that I'm using my personal account is actually following where I am as a human being right then and there. With Abilities Ride, you're booking your Metro Access trip. We're using the latitude, longitude, and it's sending the vehicle supposedly to that latitude, longitude address where you're supposed to be located. I think that's where the issue is. And one of the reasons, and the whole committee knows, for accessibility purpose, I was always first and foremost talking about SMS and text messaging. And I was committed to that even against Uber's wishes because of accessibility. However, one thing I'm learning, and one of the reasons Kevin was on here talking more about the Uber app itself, is that I think, and the goal would be long term, that if an Abilities Ride trip is with a customer, even if you don't have a credit card on file, and that's the key, I don't think Uber's agreed with that part yet. If you use the Uber app, then the Uber app, and you click on your link from the Uber app, hopefully, then it will give you the exact same experience that it will be tracking you as a person holding that phone, not trying to match you with the longitude, latitude
Right.
of the
Agree with you there.
address. That's
Okay.
what we're trying to
Yeah.
get to.
Good too. Good. That's good to know. All right. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate the extra little bit of time.
Nice
Thank you,
knowing.
Mr. Blake and Kevin.
All right. Anu, we're going to start public comment period. Go ahead with your spiel.
Okay, thank you, Chair Simon Ford. If any members of the public connected on this meeting would like to make public comments, please let us know now. You can either send a chat message, or if you're connected through phones, you can press star 9 to raise your virtual hands. If you are connected through video conference, you can click on the raise hand icon. For some, it might be under reactions. At this, and just to remind, every member of the public who wants to make public comments will receive 2 minutes. And we are practicing to in this time limit to ensure that anyone who's intending to make comments gets an opportunity to do so. So far, we have two members of the public who are trying to make comments. First is Pamela White, and the second person is a person on phone. And their last four numbers are 7439. So, Ms. White, when you start speaking, I will start the timer for 2 minutes.
Good evening. Yes, today I was on a minivan. Will y'all ever think about not putting a wheelchair and an ambulatory person on the same minivan. I was on one today. I was already on there, and they went to pick up a wheelchair. Okay, I'm all the way to the on the left, and they put the wheelchair on the right. The driver, he's 6 foot, I don't know how, 4 or 5, I don't know. But it was very awkward. He had to keep crossing me. He got to keep crossing the, it was not good today. It was not good to have an ambulatory. I don't think both of them need to be on there at the same time. Maybe one or the other, but not both at the same time. And he was tall, and he had to bend down, and then he had to cross over me and have to cross over the wheelchair and get out. It was a bit much. And maybe you need to look at that when you schedule these trips, not to put an ambulatory person on with a wheelchair. I don't know if you can check that out when you start scheduling the trips or what, but it was not good. It was not good. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. And we hear you loud and clear, Ms. White. Respectfully, we will continue to share rides, including the policy on the minivan is either two ambulatory passengers or one ambulatory passenger and one wheelchair. And I would just say, that's public transportation. But I would also remind, because I was just looking at the data again today, preparing for this meeting, less than 40% of trips in the month of November, and so far less than 30% of trips so far in the month of December have been shared rides. I respect that this was awkward, not good. I'll go look at the video from the vehicle, but the fact of the matter is Metro Access customers are getting far more direct trips than any other paratransit service in this nation. And there will still have to be some shared rides. We can't eliminate that, but we won't go to a policy that says wheelchair people cannot be transported. People in wheelchair and other mobility devices can't be transported with an ambulatory passenger and a minivan. We can't just set that sort of policy.
All right. Well,
okay.
Thank you.
Sorry, but thank you. I'll look at the video though for sure.
Oh, right, no, if nothing can be done about it, don't worry about it then. I'm not even going to bring it up. I won't bring it up again. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you so much.
So the next person is on phone. The last four numbers are 7439. Please go ahead.
Yes, this is Alfreda H. McKinley. I do Uber. And I've listened to what you all have said, but there's not a lot of truth in it. Number one, I'm ready to start using the vans again. I'm going to wait a little while, but I'm definitely going back to the vans, mainly because I haven't downloaded the app and I have no intentions of doing it. I call and make my reservations with Metro Access reservations. And I ask them, based on all of my experiences, to put in comments so that I can be picked up and dropped off at specific locations. And pretty much I do the same trips on a daily basis. But Uber does not do comments. And I end up having to direct the drivers because a goodly amount of them do not know where they're going. They rely on the GPS and they actually get upset when you try to send them another way, instead of technically they go around Robin Hood's barn. In addition to that, one of my complaints about what the Uber drivers do, an Uber driver will take the trip. They will say, oh, they'll be there in 20 minutes. I'm standing there waiting for my ride. Next thing you know, the trip has been dropped from A driver and B driver picks it up. And I'm waiting another 15, 20 minutes for the driver to get there. So far, I've waited 30 minutes and I'm still waiting to be picked up. One of the other complaints that I have is that They always end up going to the back of buildings. I have to call, and this is very important, because they go to the back of buildings, even though they can't get in a fence or a gate, and they don't call you. They will not call. Some of them will. Most of them won't. The phones are, they say they may have somebody else on the phone or somebody else with them. But I have to, on a pretty regular basis, ask the Uber drivers not to talk on the phone and have personal conversations while they're taking me to my destination after I've had issues with them picking me up because I've had to try to call them. And this is something that happens a lot. And I hate to say it like this, but based on my experiences, I'm actually going backwards. When Uber drivers used to ignore, don't call you, whatever, that was in the beginning, actually right after the pandemic. They're actually going back to the beginning of them not doing what I feel they should do. And it has a lot to do with the fact that a lot of them I have seen and heard are actually illegals. And if you don't believe me, about a month and a half ago when ICE was hot, a lot of the drivers who are Hispanic or speak Spanish, they stopped picking me up. I was getting Africans, those from Ethiopia, Nigeria. I was getting a lot of Black Americans who were driving. When I did get a Hispanic, then it was on weekends when ICE wasn't hot. And okay. They get upset and angry when you try to, you know, help them. But this is what I am experiencing, and I have gotten absolutely and totally frustrated. But right now, Uber is a good thing for me. But I'm going back to the van eventually because I can't keep getting upset.
Somebody from Metrex,
let me just say this. First of all, I don't accept the term illegal. I don't know what that's supposed to mean, and we're not getting into that. You know, you have my number. Every time we've taken you off of Uber, you fussed about going back on there. But hey, the way we said it, this is not part of the entitlement. This is not a requirement for you to use Uber. It is a benefit. Anytime you're ready to not utilize Uber and maybe another service or, like you say, Metro Access, we will be happy to remove you from being considered by my lottery for Uber trips. But to besmirch the drivers, some don't do their job, and those are the ones Kevin and I and everyone else are after. But to besmirch the drivers based on their nationality is wrong. It's unfair. You shouldn't do that. Anytime you're ready to come off of Uber, obviously I'm going to take you off of Uber, and we'll go from there. Thank you.
Well, see, the reason why I did that.
We do have to continue with other members of the public. Thank you so much. Okay. So we do have Amanda Hellman. When you start speaking, I will turn the timer on for 2 minutes.
Yes. Good afternoon. I guess I also have concerns about the drivers always dropping me in the alley with the trash cans and trying to pick me up from the alley. So I don't know how that can be resolved in terms of the address, locations, or mapping, or whatever the case is. But I do want to let you know that that does still happen. Also, when I have a Metro Access ride scheduled, and for whatever reason, I get the call, and you all say, well, we'd like to offer you an Uber instead, or sometimes they just put me on an Uber, even though I have Metro Access scheduled. When the Uber driver comes, sometimes he does not have the correct address to where I'm going. And I've sent a text message to the I guess the SMS line for if you have a problem with your ride and no one ever responds. I had to tell the driver where I was going because the address he has was it fortunately it was on the same street where I was going, but it was not the address that was there. And when I went back into the Metro Access system, I see that you all had the address correct on Metro Access side, but on the Uber side, and I do have the Uber app, it did not have the correct address. So I'm trying to understand how does that happen? Is that on WMATA's side sending the information to Uber, or is it that Uber gets it wrong? And how can that be corrected, especially if when I send the text message to WMATA to tell them it's not correct, no one responds to me?
One thing I would say, I can't answer the question as to the address until I look in the trip to see if it was human error or something else. My number is published. I'm going to put it in the chat. Next time you experience anything like this, follow all the steps you took before, but I need to be communicated about it. If you remember the dates and the times of this particular trip you're talking about, please text me tonight at the number I'm going to put in the chat and send me the information. I will be happy to look at it, and I probably can identify the cause of the issue pretty quickly, but I need to know about it. So I don't know how long ago this happened, but we could go back to the beginning of the program and I could find the trip. I could see who booked the trip, see if it was Tim, our digital assistant, or if it was a human agent. And if so, did the human agent put in the wrong address? So you let me know the information. Please send me a text message now or right after this meeting, and I will look right into the trip.
Thank you, Mr. Blake.
Thank you so much. Welcome for this back. Any other members for any members of the public question or topic period?
Chair Samford, I'm not seeing any additional member hands up by members of the public. We do have Sandy Newsell with her hand up, though.
All right, go ahead, Sandy.
Hi, this is Sandy. When I book my Metro Access rides, I do it online. And several years ago, I was told that in the comments section, since I walk with a white cane, I should use the expression ambulatory. So for a long time, I put ambulatory in there. But recently, I had the experience where it was an abilities ride that was picking me up. Went to the back of the retirement community building because, and then when he finally tracked me down at the front of the building, I mean, we had a phone conversation and he finally, it wasn't too bad, but he said, I went where they have the ambulance pick up and drop off. And I'm like, no, ambulatory. So there's a translation issue. And I believe one of my low vision friends had a similar issue where ambulatory got mixed up with ambulance. So since then, I've been putting in for this, special pickup instructions, walk with white cane. Is that appropriate, Mr. Blake, for me to do that to make it more clear in simple English?
Yeah, 'cause anything to help the driver in this case, or the Metro Access operator is useful information. The ambulatory piece, I would just say I get it, but I would just say, I hate to say this, it's not just non-native English speakers who sometimes aren't totally reading comprehensive, if you get my drift.
Oh, I totally get that because it's a long word, and the first many letters are exactly the same, ambulatory and ambulance. It's only the last couple letters, so it's easy to mix those up. So, I just want.
But walk with a cane is absolutely fair, yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right, it is 5:58. Do we have time for a 1 or 2 minute public comment from one more person?
We have Sarah Rod with her hand up. Sarah, if you'd like to go quickly, we have less than a minute.
Yep,
All right.
thanks. Mr. Blake, this is circling back to the first question about the person who is the ambulatory person with a wheelchair on the same vehicle. And I was just wondering, I mean, I'm with you on it's a shared ride thing. That's not the issue. What I'm wondering is there any plan or training or specification for where the wheelchair should be placed? Like, would it help if the drivers were told to put this person on this side and that person on this side because of the way the straps go or because the way the wheelchair fits better or anything like that? You may recall a few months ago, I sent you some photos and a story about something that happened in a ride I was on, and you're very helpful in responding. But I'm just wondering, is there anything like that that might actually be helpful to resolve
Well,
this?
and that's why I'm committed to watching the video, because one of the things we've learned, so it sounded like Ms. White was on the driver's side edge of the bench, and we found it's been difficult to ask passengers to move over, either in a sedan or not saying Ms. White wouldn't have, but I think now we're just not doing that much. I want to look at the video. Did the driver, one of the reasons, and I heard her say it was awkward. One of the reasons the minivans are effective, depending on locations and everything else, the left side door does open. So instead of standing awkwardly close to Miss White and in varying shapes, we've encouraged drivers to use that opening on the other side to secure the vehicles, not just, bunch up against a customer or passenger who may already be on the vehicle. I take Ms. White totally at her word. I understand. And yes, we're going to review the video to find specific retraining this particular operator may need and address him or her as an individual. And then when we see something that we believe in such a case, if we find something that is probably not just this driver being totally negligent, but something that other drivers may be doing as well in the system, we make it a blanket messaging in retraining for the entire fleet. So I won't be able to answer totally on this issue until I actually see the video and we can decide what error or errors were made and where efforts at improvement and utilizing the room made possible by the double doors was or was not taken advantage of.
All of that was it was taken advantage, and the
It is.
driver, I mean,
Not
it was.
beyond 6.
So
Oh, I just
he
want
opened the passenger, the driver's side door.
Interpreter.
He did. I'm yeah, and he's been around for a while,
So,
and he's really a trainer. I mean, I think he had him out there driving, but I would just not to get a
if he
driver
was
in.
on side.
I'm not trying to get a driver in any trouble. I'm just want to voice my opinion of how y'all could do it different. I mean, maybe one, either or, but not both at the same, because the van is so small, and then you got a 6'4" driver trying to do that, and he did utilize both sides of the door. So it's not trying to get a driver in trouble, but
Well, it's not going to get in trouble. It's about retraining, but I've got to figure out how he was awkwardly close to you, and I have to look at the
No, not
video.
awkwardly close to me. I'm not saying he was close to me like that. He just had to
If
keep
you can,
jump. He just had to keep putting a
I
leg
say.
over me. I mean, it was not bad, but anything like
Okay.
that, no.
I'm gonna take a
Okay.
look at the video. Nobody's gonna get in trouble. What
Okay.
we're gonna do is re-educate if
We don't.
necessary.
Okay,
That's
thank
an
you.
option, but
Sorry. Sorry. Bye.
thank
You can't
you.
conduct the video after 6 when we lose our interpreter. That's
Okay.
not fair. All right. So, anew make your spiel. The addendum must adjourn.
All right. Any members of the public, if you'd like to send us your public comments, you can email them to metroaacchair@vamada.com or call and leave a message at 202-962-1100. Thank you.
All right, to adjourn, please do so by saying aye.
Hi.
All right.
Hi.
Hi.
All right.
Hi.
Thank you for a wonderful, productive meeting at the end of the year.
Take
Happy
care.
New
Happy New
Year.
Year,
Happy New
everybody.
Year.
Great.
Happy holidays.